This episode is brought to you by Gin & Co., author website design specialists. If you want a beautiful and functional website to promote your books and brand, reach out to Gin today. His work includes tailored, expertly designed professional author websites. I finally have a website I'm proud to share. And we've got a special offer for Words and Nerds listeners. Reach out today and get a free domain name and website hosting for the first year. You can get their website essentials package, includes domain name, website hosting, backup and security, free for the first year with any website purchase. This is valued at $330 a year. Choose a website designed to bring your author brand to life. You can find more details about this special offer at ginand.co/wordsandnerds. Welcome to the 2024 series of the Words and Nerds podcast. I'm Danny B, author, publisher, and your podcast host. With over 1 million plays, thanks to you, listeners, readers, writers, creatives, teachers, librarians, and book lovers, thank you for coming along for the journey where we bring you relaxed and real conversations about writing and creativity. If you love an episode, you can leave a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow the podcast on Instagram or Facebook at Danny V Words and Nerds Podcast. Or you can check out my brand new website designed by Gin & Co. at dannyv.com.au. Welcome to the Words and Nerds podcast, where we bring literary goodness straight to your ears. Today, I welcome Samantha Ellen Bound. Samantha is a writer, editor, and children's author. She has many years' experience working with books as a bookseller, reviewer, editor, production, and marketing coordinator. That is a lot. We'll have to talk about all of that, I think. Samantha Ellen has been shortlisted for numerous short story awards, including most recently the Peter Carey and Right Around the Murray Short Story Awards. And she's also been shortlisted for the Vogel Prize in 2018 and been a recipient of a May Gibbs Creative Time Fellowship. But we're here today to talk about the return of this book, the third and penultimate book in her best-selling middle grade series, Seven Wherewithal Way, inspired by the spellbinding creatures and stories of world folklore. So there's a lot to talk about here. Welcome, Samantha Ellen Bound.
There sure is. I'm sure we'll get through it. And thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to be here with you, Danny.
Well, the first thing I noticed about this book was how beautiful the cover was. And I say, yes, you must judge your books by their cover because covers are beautiful things. And this one particularly with all the red and the shiny bronze, it is just a divine cover. So, I mean, well, we will start with an elevator pitch, but what happens when this divine cover comes to you in the mail? I mean, what's the reaction?
Well, it's always because obviously you have seen it. It goes through, you know, the little editing process where you see the first one, maybe that doesn't have color at all. Then you see maybe the foil elements and, you know, you give your feedback, which I'm really lucky. My publishers are always very keen to take on my feedback. Usually I don't have much because the illustrator and the designer, Flavia Sorrentino, who is an illustrator based in Italy, is just spot on most of the time. She actually does a lot of really beautiful, whimsical fairy tale illustrations for a lot of picture books. So it's a really good match in that way. And she has captured the sort of the characters and the creatures and all the little whimsical, folky elements really well. So then when you see it, obviously you get to see the foil and it's all shiny and it doesn't matter. I mean, I've had 13 books now, but it's still when you do unpack that box and see the book, it's always, it's like, oh, I made that. And it never gets old. It's always, always gorgeous. Yeah.
I love that. And I love then when you get that finished book, it's the coming together of all these creative people, you know, cover design and editors and, you know, the publishing house and you and all these other things come together. I think that's pretty cool. So let's start with an elevator pitch. Give me an elevator pitch for Seven Wherewithal Way.
Okay. It's turned out to be quite the epic series. So perhaps I'll give you a brief rundown of the Seven Wherewithal Way series as a whole first up. So the series is inspired by my love of folk tales, fairy tales, and portal fantasies. So the Seven Wherewithal Way of the title is a house, and inside this house there are six portals that go through to other realms, and each of these realms is inspired by a different world folklore. So wherewithal is kind of your waypoint, your gateway toward these realms. and it's run by Ferd, who is the cousin of our main characters, Celeste and Esme. So, Celeste and Esme get drawn into the world of the realms, as of course they have to, because otherwise there wouldn't be a book if they didn't. And so the realms are currently in the middle of, I guess you would call it an uprising. So our big baddie, Redcap, wants to take power from the realm's governing body, the Order of the Golden Quills. And the books so far, so there have been two so far, so this one will be the third and the fourth next year. But the books so far follow Werewolf's efforts to prevent Redcap and his minions from getting their mitts on powerful magical artifacts called Hagstones, which will certainly give them an upper hand in the uprising, and also saving the various creatures who are getting caught up in the chaos. So that is the core action plot. That is as short and as succinct as I can make it without giving you the main points. So that's the sort of main action plot. But thematically, the books are also about found family, our relationship with power, the nature of being a hero, good, bad binaries. And really, they're a coming-of-age story just told through fantasy, which is something that I really connect to personally. So that is the overview of the series, but very quickly, the third book, so that's called Over the Mountains and Through the Desert, and that begins when Ferd is summoned to the realm of mountains, which is inspired by Japanese folklore, particularly the yokai tradition. I'm sure a lot of listeners will know that and love it. It is fantastic. And then it goes on to the realm of desert, which is inspired by African folklore. And there's loads of action and creepy beasties as the Werewolf gang are taken captive in the Order prison, pursued across rice fields, volcanic mountains, waterfalls, sea caves. They get lost at sea in the middle of Ninyo territory, and Ninyo is a Japanese mermaid. And they have to rescue more creatures that they love, and they get some bad news, and they have to go to the realm of desert to seek help. And there they're plagued by a vampiric shapeshifter called Ards, who is spreading terror and disease all throughout the realm of desert. So that is what the third book is about. So as you can see, there's a lot packed in there.
There is a lot packed in there, and what I find really interesting is the folklore stuff. And folklore generally, I mean, you're the expert here, but it does explore universal themes of human fears, family, celebration, and belonging. But I want to know, I mean, they're pretty important things, but I want to know your passion for folklore and how that came about.
Yeah, sure. So that was the main inspiration for the books. That's something that I have loved since I was a young, well, since I first started to read. So I love not only, I guess, the beasties and the fantastical animals and the creepy, often very poignant stories that go along with those, but I also really love the deep reverence that folklore gives to the natural world, because nature is where I find magic. So I have yet to find a fairy portal at the bottom of my own garden, and so where I do find that magic is in art and in nature. And I feel that there are places in the world that are so wondrous and so old and so beautiful, they could be magical. And many of the settings in Werewolf are inspired by real world places, like Iguazu Falls, Plitvice Lakes, Tikal, Hansong Dong Caves, kelp forests, reefs, giant glaciers in Iceland. Places where I feel they're so old and you feel the specialness of them as if it is something physical. So I think that folklore recognizes that and it has a reverence for that. It connects people to the land, to their roots, to community. But it also, through the tools of mystery and fantasy and sometimes horror, all these things that go into folklore, it teaches those people to respect the natural world, to preserve it, to honor it. And I really just adore that. I think that's really, really special. And part of why I also love folklore, and I guess fantasy in general, is that what if element. Because I'm someone who still gets such a, I guess, quite a childish thrill, from walking through graveyards or or discovering like hidden paths. And I find it glorious, the possibility that there is something else of discovery. It's exciting, right? But it's also, I think, very comforting. And it's comforting to me because I have always felt more at home in imaginative worlds than I do in reality. And that's a feeling that I remember having even way back in early primary school, a sort of feeling that I don't fit here, or there has to be something more, or the things that satisfy the people, like they just don't satisfy. Why don't I get it? What's wrong with me? That kind of thing. And I always felt far more comfortable daydreaming and reading books, or being on stage, or basically pretending. And I always have. And I think that's why fantasy and folklore is important for a lot of people, because it does become a place of belonging. It becomes a safe space. And I really love the idea that we use folklore and our imaginations to make sense of reality. And we escape to art, imagination, creativity. That's really beautiful. And I think sometimes for a lot of people, that's quite life-saving as well. And I think that is all tied up into why I just really love folklore and fantasy.
Yeah, and I love that idea of art being consoling to us and escaping in art. I think that's, part of why art is so important and why people do get lost in books. Now, I wanted to ask you about your character. Now, Celeste faces great challenges in this book. It's even on the back cover, it says that Celeste Barden is about to face her biggest challenge yet. But this being a series, not only do you have to do character arcs for each book, you've kind of got to do character arcs for each series, or for the entire series, sorry. So how do you go about doing that? Is it something you're always thinking about? Is it a bridge you cross as you come to it?
Yeah, I think writing a series, and I have written junior fiction series before, but this is on a whole nother level, I think. It's been epic, and it's very fulfilling, but it's also extremely exhausting, because in the space of 4 years, so there'll be basically a book out each year that I have not written in advance. So you're writing, editing, marketing 4 books in 4 years, and it can get really quite full on, especially when you have a full-time job, or other responsibilities. The way I compare it to is sort of what it feels like is the night before, like when you're at uni maybe and you had an exam due, but you have an assignment due, but you haven't really done any, and it's like 3 a.m. and you have to get it done or you're going to fail. And it's such, like, you do it, but it's just like a night of hell. And sometimes that has what it's the past 4 years have just felt like, that constant pressure.
I love that. Right is a night of hell. I love that. I think that's the new tagline.
So it was certainly, and I was always someone who thought that would be fine, and not that I didn't understand, but sometimes when there's a fantasy series and that there's a big gap in between one book and the next, like a few years, and it gets extended. And I always thought, like, I guess I didn't understand that, but now I totally understand that. But I do think it's taught me to be a better writer, and I think it definitely has changed me from being a bit of a pantser to more of a plotter. And you're absolutely right. So you're never, even though you are writing one book at a time and that story has to be self-contained and that story has to hit all its marks, you're also writing the whole series, and each book needs to work in the context of the largest series, and the stakes have to constantly get higher. And I guess Easter eggs that you put in book two now have to pay off, 2 books later, and you have to hark back to previous things and hint at future things, and a tiny detail mentioned in passing 2 books ago suddenly becomes a whole plot point, and you have to think, what's that character arc doing, and is that character earning their place in the whole series? And ultimately, I think it's a lot of attention to detail and a lot of world building that you have to manage, but it does make writing the series more fulfilling. I think there's a real sense of, I guess, achievement in creating that kind of epic world. So it's absolutely, as I said, can just feel exhausting and overwhelming at times, but it's still extremely fulfilling, and it still is exciting as well. Like, I've never ever lost the excitement for what comes next, I guess, in
Yeah.
these books.
I love the idea how you said you went from pantsing to plotting because I've often thought that you are one or the other. So it's interesting you've been able to make that transition, maybe because you've had to. But tell me how that works and how you sort of changed your own process from pantser to plotter.
I think with my first two books, I was pretty happy to just. I think always with the first draft, I am not someone who fine-tunes as I go along. I sort of write where the story takes me, I guess, and then know that I can come back and shape it later. I feel, to me anyway, and this is certainly different for a lot of people, but to me, that feels, for me, the most authentic way to write. And the stuff that I, that's where the stuff that I really want to say, that's where it comes out. So there was always that aspect to my first books, but here, I think purely because you are not just dealing with one book, you're dealing with a whole world. And so before I write, sit down to sort of write any of the books, I have a notebook full of things that need to happen in this book, what the characters need to do, what the plot needs to do. Each chapter has like a whole spread of points and ideas that need to, I mean, I don't always follow it. I often something that's in chapter eight, it's sort of, oh, I'll put that in chapter 13 instead. And then I get to it, I'm like, no, it doesn't fit here. Maybe that will be better in chapter 17. But it really helps me just keep track of not letting the story run away with me, I guess. And I am a bit of a chronic overwriter, so I do need that bit of discipline. So I think, yeah, I think it's just the nature of having to write the series, but I do actually really like it. So I hope that I carry that into future books, whether they're four-part series or not.
I love all of that. And it is tough to do that. Now you've been in the industry, as I mentioned in your bio, in various forms over the years. So what I'm interested in, having all these different perspectives on the industry, what have you learned about writing or publishing or book selling, for as a matter of fact, because that's really interesting too.
I think that's really interesting that the way the industry has changed, I guess. Now, certainly there's authors who have been there longer than me. My first book came out in 2013, but even since then, which is, let's say 10 years, there is, I think, a big shift in how, and it's really with online and social media and everything, but authors are much more visible and they're expected to have much more of a presence. A lot of the sort of traditional ways that I, or the things that I remember doing for my first book, I feel like now there's a lot more expectation on an author to market their book, which can be really enjoyable if, and especially as probably most authors are, they're quite creative. So that can be fun. But it's also, I guess, time that you spend away from writing. And I think if you already have a busy schedule, it can just feel like another extra thing that you have to try and squeeze in. And of course, you're going to try and squeeze it in because you want your book to do well. So that is certainly like a huge, massive, massive shift that I've seen. And I also think I'd love to see a bit more attention. And I'm not just because I have a series, I'm not just saying that. This is things that I have observed as a bookseller and in other aspects of publishing. When there is a series, I'd love to see a bit more attention given to the whole series. Just support given throughout the series rather than the first book. And maybe it does really well, but maybe it just does okay. But maybe with a bit more support, it might go on to do well. But I feel that if that first book sort of doesn't make a massive big splash, then it kind of gets forgotten about a bit. And that's a real shame, obviously. Because the series isn't getting a chance, and of course, as well for authors, that's a lot of their work, and not to see not much result, I guess. So there are a couple of things that I have observed, but at the same time, a really big positive is just this rise and rise of, I guess, online book community, and that's especially for me, obviously, I'm working in the kid lit space. That is just wonderful. The support and I don't know, I just think that's a really beautiful supportive space to be in. So that is something that I think has been helped by social media and online book communities. I love that. I think that's wonderful. And that was certainly it was certainly harder, I guess, to find your people when I was first starting out. Yeah.
No, I think you've touched on so many important things there. Community is everything, and the book community is one of the best communities I think we can be part of. So we're very lucky. And I also think that's interesting about the marketing of the book, and I've noticed that too, working in publishing myself. And it's like, you become an expert in one thing. So if you're a writer, then all of a sudden you've got to be an expert in marketing and publicity. And it's never been harder, I think, to market and publicity. I mean, print media is really difficult, and the TV only have, really big authors, or they have themes, or, celebrities. So it's really hard to get, your publicity out there. So I think what you're saying about series was really interesting, because sometimes a book, in order for the book one to go well, you kind of do have to give the series a chance to pick up, and then, then book one and book two and book three will always increase. So it's interesting, because as a publisher, you don't want to keep producing books if they're not working. But as a writer, you think, well, it just needs more time to actually find its audience. So it's a really tricky balancing act, I think. You're right.
It is really hard, and I'm sure you know that as well, Danny, being both an author and also working in publishing yourself. Like you do understand the both sides of it, of course you do. But yeah, I guess my heart always sort of lies with the authors first, and sometimes I just feel like, oh, it just needed just a bit more of a push. But at the same time, I love that, when this happens, or I love the grit, I guess, that authors show. Just obviously, I think publishing is, or being an author is probably really hard on a lot of people's mental health. Because even though, it's not, I guess, personal, it's still your book, and of course, it still feels personal when it either doesn't do well or not as good as it should, or whatever happens with it. And even though I think we as authors are genuinely really happy for other people's success, you're still, of course, devastated if you feel that your book has not reached those heights or been overlooked. And it is hard to not take that personally, but I'm so inspired. And I have a few author friends like this. They just keep going. It doesn't matter. They just keep working. They always have something on the go. They have this lovely optimism. They just keep showing that grit and determination and keep plugging away. And sometimes I think that that is more important than talent sometimes. I find them so inspiring. I'm just in awe of some authors that I think that's really special.
Yeah, I agree. And I think what's really special is being creative and also having to have that grit, because often the two don't work hand in hand, So to have them both, I think that's, really, some really cool skills we got there. Now, the question I ask all the authors who come on, because I'm very interested, and it's different for everyone, and I think it changes over time is as well, why do you write?
Well, I think for me, it helps me both escape the world and also make sense of the world. So I think I'm a very curious person. I always want to find out everything. I always want to find out more, and then I want to explore how I feel about it. And I think sometimes that is easier for me to express in words than in speech, I guess. And I think it's just as a creative person, you just have it in you. If it's not going to be writing, it's going to be something else. It's just the way that you express yourself. And I personally love, I think, capturing moments. When I think about moments that have profoundly affected me in my life and how they made me feel, I love trying to translate that and to share, to put that into words in a way that will connect with a reader. So I think there's an aspect of connection about it that is really lovely and is definitely one of the main reasons that I write. And then I guess, I mean, for kids as well, that's a different thing again, I think. I think, I mean, I never actually was going to write for kids. The first, my first book was actually started as a uni assignment. And when you get the feedback, I intended it as an adult book, and they were like, no, this is actually like you should write for kids. This will do well as a children's book. So I kind of thought, okay, yeah, cool. I guess because I write predominantly now in middle grade, I think that's an age that I naturally just gravitate towards because I love that coming of age time. It's an impressionable time. It can be a very wondrous time. It can be a very hard time, but there's something very special about that time because I think you are discovering who you are, and you're discovering the person that you want to be. And it's where you sort of make a lot of very adult realizations, not only about yourself, but about the world. But you still have a really special sense of wonder, I think. And I find that really beautiful. And so I think as an adult, that sense of wonder, whether it can tend to get beaten down, whether you beat that down in yourself or whether, it's just the world. But in that middle grade audience, I think that sense of wonder is still celebrated. And I love that. And I think that's why I gravitate towards writing for children.
No, I love that, and I love that sense of wonder, and I think that's really important for kids too, to have that. And this is such a great book and has all those fantasy elements, but you can still explore the serious issues within it. And you've got this amazing character, Celeste, so I think it has all those. I mean, who doesn't love a portal, right?
Oh, I would love to find a portal. Danny, if you hear any whispers of one, let me know I'm there.
Yeah, you'll be the first person I call, but somehow I think you'll be the one to find the portal. So it might have to be the other way around. But thank you so
Worries at all.
much. Thank you so much for spending this time. I mean, I can see the way that you talk about the book and the way you describe folklore and you talk about creativity. This is real passion for you. And I love speaking to passionate people, particularly when they're passionate about creativity. So it's been a real pleasure to listen to you and learn from you things that I didn't know about folklore. And I love the idea about creativity being so important. And all the things that you said about what's changed in the industry, I think they're really interesting. And I think you've got this amazing perspective on all things writing books and publishing. So thank you for sharing all of that with me on the podcast.
Oh, Jenny, you're so welcome. I love chatting to you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.